This is the first meeting of the American Rescue Plan Act Special Committee, and we have a big crowd tonight. Welcome, everybody. We have a lot of work to do this evening, and so I will get us started. Let me actually just see if Craig is texting me. Hang on. No. Okay. Amber, could you please call the roll?
Peter Criswell.
Here.
Thomas Corcoran.
Here.
Aaron Levine.
Here.
Craig Lopez. Megan Sperry.
Here.
Great. Thank you so much. I was going to do a go around of introductions, but I think there's just too many people on this call. That'll take too much time. So if you want something to say, if at some point you want to speak, if you could let Amber know, and we'll get a cue if there's time for questions. And of course, when we are looking at resolutions, we'll have people who are talking about those resolutions speak, and we can have as many speakers in that as we want. So I'm just going to do a little welcome and opening of this. So thank you all for being here, and committee members, thank you for offering up your service on this committee. It's a really important committee, as you know. We have a great opportunity here, and we keep talking about it as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and I really believe that. And I think we have a responsibility to our constituents to look at these funds as critically and as compassionately as possible, so that we use these dollars in the best and highest way to help our constituents' immediate needs and also the long-term needs. So I jotted down a few ideas about kind of the mission of this committee. And so I'm just going to read off a few things. And then I asked each of you if you would take a few minutes over the last week to just share your thought, put down your thoughts and then share them with us about what you think about the spending of these dollars in this special committee that we have. So I'm just going to read this out. This committee is dedicated to the investment and allocation of American Rescue Plan Fund Act funds utilized to help turn the tide of the pandemic, address its economic fallout, and lay the foundation for a strong and equitable recovery. To review all proposals related to the expenditure of ARPA funds prior to forwarding to any standing committees of jurisdiction. So the American Rescue Plan Act Special Committee has dedicated the investment and allocation of $34,491,474, that's the American Rescue Plan Act federal funding. Ulster County will receive these funds over 2 years. The special committee is going to review and track all proposals related to the expenditure of federal ARPA funds before forwarding them to the legislative standing committees of jurisdiction. The special committee will have standing committees same power and duties, and the ARPA special committee will be dissolved in 3 years or after all ARPA funds are spent. The allocation of ARPA funds requires diligent and careful investigation, vetting, and oversight. The special committee will be a transparent vehicle for evaluating all proposed ARPA expenditures. The special committee will work to ensure that ARPA funds are effectively used to provide immediate economic stabilization for households and businesses impacted by the pandemic, strengthen vital public services, and remedy systemic public health and economic challenges that have contributed to the unequal impact of the pandemic. And lastly, the legislature will work in active partnership with the executive branch to build a pathway to an equitable recovery with long-term benefits for health and the strongest possible economic outcome for the residents of Ulster County. So I read that really just to ground us in what we're doing here. And I won't do that at every meeting, but I do think it's important for this first meeting, since this is the first time this committee has ever met. So I'd like to ask committee members what your thoughts were that you collected, and please share them with us. And I'm not going to pick on you, so anybody can go first. Tom?
Well, I guess reading through everything, we could understand the examples of use of the funds, where they should go and what should happen. I think obviously the legislature should work with the executive's office, but at this point, I think if we gave it to them, they'd have all $34 million spent already. What Marlboro needs, Kingston don't know. What Kingston needs, Marlboro don't know. we were asked some time ago, 6-8 months ago, the existing members to write a little summary of what they thought our municipalities might need or could need for these funds. I haven't seen anything come about that. So what I would ask the executive office to do is working with us to also work with each community and maybe each supervisor or mayor and see what maybe that community needs. Again, I'm all for using this money in an appropriate way, but being in the Southern Tier, I fear sometimes we're somewhat left out and Kingston somewhat gets a majority of what's going on with this money. So looking out for my constituents and actually the whole Southern Tier down here, I would hope that the executive office would work with our supervisors down here and maybe ask what we're looking for, because as a legislator, I did put together a somewhat lengthy letter, not asking for multiple $1 million, but for something reasonable, at least for my community down here. So input by the legislature is great, but I think input from the communities themselves in the county, from mayors and supervisors, should also be weighed somewhat into this also.
Great. Thank you very much, Legislative Corcoran. Thank you. Who'd like to talk next? Legislator Sperry? I am going to call on people then.
I'm new, very new. So I'm just thinking about ways that I think are obvious that, you know, we could be spending the money, such as towards housing and other supportive systems around security issues, whether it's housing or food or, you know, mental health or anything like that. But I do agree that we need to kind of look back to our communities and see what the communities feel is the deficit at the moment, or like the deficit leading us to where we are right now. And so maybe that's something that we could do over the next couple of months. I hope that's not too long of a guess, but just to kind of meet with different organizations and then see what the needs are, and then maybe come back together and try to compile like an assessment of how we could distribute, you know, to each community, to each jurisdiction that way, like not just as like a one size fits all thing, but, you know, something that would make sense to the county wide, but also, you know, to each of our different districts.
Thank you so much. Legislator Bartels, can I ask Legislator Levine to go first and then I'll call on you? Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Criswell and Deputy Chair Corcoran and Legislator Sperry and Legislator Lopez and everybody else who's on the call. I'm looking forward to working with you all on this, you know, vitally important committee. You know, I look at this funding as, you know, this truly is a once in a lifetime opportunity for us here in Ulster County to, you know, to put a significant investment, you know, into needed programs and infrastructure that I think are really going to make a difference in people's lives here in the county and throughout the Hudson Valley. I mean, I don't think it's too much of a, you know, I don't think it's too much to say to compare it to probably, this is probably the biggest opportunity for investment this county has probably seen on this kind of level, probably since like the New Deal, I would say. In terms of, you know, we're not going to be able to see this opportunity for funding coming around again. So we need to be very vigilant and, you know, and smart about how we are utilizing this funding. I agree with, you know, with Legislator Corcoran and Legislator Sperry in what they were saying about, I think it's a good idea to reach out and get collaboration from our local governments within our districts. I'm most certainly looking forward to corresponding with Town Supervisor Costello and the other members of the town board in the town of Saugerties. And I'm sure I'll get some input from, even though I don't represent the village of Saugerties, I'll most certainly be happy to interact with the mayor and the village board members to get their advisement as well. You know, I think this is going to be a very collaborative effort. I think it's going to be something that we're you know, we want to work together with the executive's office to make sure that we're working in a collaborative environment and it's not unilaterally coming, you know, just from the executive's office. I think, you know, we need to be making sure that we're all, you know, speaking with one voice. But the biggest issue that I have, you know, digesting all this and going over it, you know, the thing that came up first to me was we need to be making sure that wherever possible, you know, we try to cut the red tape as much as possible and make sure that this funding gets out in an equitable and as in a fashion as quickly as possible, because, you know, people are really going to be depending on this. So we need to be making sure that government is efficient and that, you know, that this needed funding is not caught up in bureaucracy and red tape as much as we possibly can make sure that that happens. So that is something that I'm going to be making sure that, you know, we are vigilant about. So looking forward to working with you all about this. And thank you. Thank you for this wonderful attendance tonight.
Thank you, Legislator Levine. Chairwoman Bartels.
Thank you. And thank you. Thank you all for your willingness to serve on this committee. I do think it's a critically important committee. And I agree with many of the statements already made in terms of investments in program and infrastructure. One thing I do, you know, want to circle back to, Legislator Corcoran talked about the outreach that was done among the previous body. That those responses, Legislator Corcoran, were collected and have been passed along to the new executive staff through Deputy Executive Kelly to aggregate all that information and see where we have outliers of suggestions from the previous body. Obviously, new legislators have yet to weigh in on the list. And when they see the full list, there may be new suggestions and there may be new suggestions that come out organically of conversations in this committee and in the body. As we know, there's a proposal that's before us today that wasn't on that list previously. So these things are going to happen throughout this process. There also was a process whereby there was an attempt to go into the communities and solicit public response. Obviously, during COVID, it's hard to get people to come out and speak at public meetings. I mean, it's hard enough as it is, but there was some valuable feedback that was gained from those meetings, and that's summarized in one of the documents as well. You know, I would also like to remind everyone that every community, every municipality received direct funds as a part of this, and we can get for the body, we can get a summary of the distribution of funds to municipalities. And I say that not to say that we shouldn't be collaborating with communities, but to say, you know, I really do agree with Legislator Levine that, you know, this may be a once in a lifetime or certainly once in my legislative lifetime opportunity. This money it's going to go quickly. You know, there's more need than there is money. So I think we really need to be mindful of choosing those projects that are going to have the largest impact. And Legislator Corcoran, I'm sensitive to the Southern Tier comment. I'm a Southern Tier representative. I've been, you know, I know what it feels like to be on the outside of the Kingston world, but I think we need to think of our constituency largely as a county constituency. And that can be challenging, but that's going to come about by having an open dialogue about the needs of each of our communities and really taking that view that, you know, as a skydiver, I'll call it the 13,000 foot viewpoint where we, you know, we back up and we look at this in a totality so that we're able to evaluate which of those projects rise to the surface as, you know, the most valuable. And it's not a first come, first serve, because that's where I think we'll get in trouble. We've already expended, and you see it in your packet, we've already promised and or committed and or expended a significant sum. So, you know, there's a lot of work to be done, and I know that each of you are the right people, and I know that this conversation is going to continue into each of the standing committees and the body. So once again, thank you all for being willing to take this on.
Thank you, Chairwoman. And can I ask the clerk to update the attendance now? I see Legislator Lopez is here.
Yes, that's right. For the record, Chair Bartels has been present and Legislator Craig Lopez is in attendance now.
And Legislator Lopez, welcome. And we're just going around, committee members are going around and talking a little bit about that. The question that I had posed to everyone to just talk a little bit about the mission of the organization of this committee and the potential spending. And I just wanted to offer you a little space to give your thoughts.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. No, I actually agree with a lot of what Tom said. You know, sometimes you know, being a representative of the southern end of Ulster County, we're often you know, forgot about, and it's important to be able to spread that around, you know, as evenly and as fairly as possible, and just to be mindful of that, you know, moving forward, Chairman Bartel's point is that a lot of this has already been spent, so you know we don't have there's still enough to go around, but it's not, you know, going to be as fluid as we originally thought. Just if we can keep that in mind when considering projects and be mindful of that it's a large county. You know, it's a county the size of Rhode Island. And sometimes, yeah, we get forgotten about. But most people think Pine Bush is in Orange County, which part of it is, but you know, we also have a small part of Ulster.
Car.
As well. So
that's a car.
Thank you. When I was thinking about this, I was thinking about questions that we might want to ask ourselves when we're looking at these resolutions. And so one of the things I've been thinking about is when we're evaluating a resolution, is it time sensitive? What are the parameters around time? Is it something that we have to consider immediately, or is it something that we can think about a little bit, do some further research? But I think that's an important question. I think it's important to look at, are there other ways to pay for the request? Can we look at other possible funding sources? Does it have to be ARPA funding? I think that's a really critical question. Is it appropriate for ARPA funding? I think we really have to look and analyze that and look at that against the guidelines. And does it actually meet the federal guidelines? They're specific. There are some broad categories, but there's also some very specific categories. So I think we have to make sure that whatever we are proposing to spend it on actually does meet those federal guidelines. And then I think the other thing we want to think about is we had some working groups that were established last year. We were calling them buckets, and basically we had people attached to them, two people from the legislature. Am I right, Chairwoman Bartels? It was two people from the legislature and one person from the executive's team. And I think we want to go back and look at those working groups to see if, because those are often people attach themselves to a working group where they had some sort of special knowledge or special passion for. And we should, I would suggest that we use those working groups to help us do a deeper dive into subject areas that we might not know or that they could give us a greater insight into. So those were some of the larger questions. I'd like to take just a short amount of time here, say 10 minutes, and kind of open the floor to anybody else who wants to chime in about how we should spend this money. But I am going to keep this to 10 minutes, so please be brief. Comptroller Gallagher, please.
I just wanted to note that your mission statement speaks to proposed expenditures, and I think the committee might want to consider playing a role in monitoring and tracking actual expenditures, not just what was proposed, but what actually occurred, so that you know exactly what's left. And so I just wanted to mention that. I think the last time that you talk about proposed expenditures, you might want to just think about including it to say actual as well.
You're speaking to my nonprofit executive director heart right now. So I definitely get that. So thank you for that. Anybody else want to chime in and have some thoughts on this? Legislator Maloney.
I'll keep it brief. Listening to Mr. Corcoran and Craig before, I think they're right. Something we should think about is if there's a legislator or a section of the county that feels as though they're not getting their fair share, then it's probably not something that's good for the entire county. If we start doing things that certain sections or certain parts of the county feel really good about, but the rest of the county isn't going to benefit from it, it's probably not big enough. We keep talking about big, doing something that's going to be here 20 to 30 years from now. I think we should be, you know, and there are parameters, and I think we really need to do a good job of educating ourselves on what those parameters are. And some of them have died, they've changed a lot over the past couple of months. So, I mean, we could talk about the RRA. We could talk about the college. I mean, you could get into senior college dorm hybrid things that are happening all over the country. Tech City, what's left of it, I think would benefit the entire county. But limited specific housing projects quickly put through, some of this, these not-for-profits that are looking for the money this quickly, I think I'm a little concerned. I think we need to be thinking bigger and farther down the road. And I actually think this large sum of money should probably be used on two or three things. If we spread this out to 50 different things, it's going to be a waste. It really is. So I honestly think things should probably be tabled tonight as we can go through them for a month or two from what I'm seeing. But I'm just seeing it, you know, not for not very long. But that's what I think. And to what Craig and Mr. Corcoran were saying, and I'll get to know him enough to even call him by his first name, but is, yeah, if they don't, if you're in Ellenville or if you're in Gardner and you don't feel like, you know, these dollars are being used in a way that benefits the people in your district, then it's definitely not big enough. And we're definitely not using it the way it was meant to be used. 20 or 30 years down the line, our kids and grandkids should be feeling the effects, job creation, environmentally, housing opportunities. So we got to be careful just subsidizing, you know, the Steve Aarons of the world. But that's what I think.
Thank you so much for those thoughts. Appreciate it. Who else? Yes, Legislator Hewitt.
Thank you, Legislator Criswell. I think the email that you sent out the other day was inspiring because you talked about using the funding that in a way that has lasting effects, where we can teach people to fish, and over the long haul we'll have opportunities and benefits that we could see generation after generation, as Legislator Maloney just mentioned. So in the last week I've been meeting with I'm in two towns, so Supervisor Baden and Howitt, heads of youth commissions, fire department members, just getting feedback from people in the community. And I think a youth commission is a great place to start with young people, and each town has youth commissions. And our county has a world-class ski mountain in it and also an amazing Catskill Park. So I've thought of an idea of working with youth commissions to create field trips to get young people interested in our forests and parks at an early age, with adult chaperones that are also learning from our forests and becoming lifelong lovers of the Catskills. So having ski tickets available, which is a very privileged sport, and we all pay for that mountain, I think is a good way to get people out of their homes and enjoy recreational opportunities, which is part of the ARPA funding. And that's one idea I have, but I have a whole list that I'd love to share with you another time.
Great. Thank you so much for your thoughts. I appreciate it. Anybody else? This is a golden opportunity.
Chris and Tim have their hands up.
Tim? Yes, hi. Thank you.
Sure. Yeah, I'll be brief and happy to go into more detail on this. We've given a lot of thought that I think we shared a presentation maybe through the clerk's office with the members of the committee. We have a program that many of you are probably aware of called the Ulster County Cares Small Business Assistance Program. This is a grant program to small businesses in the county, especially focused on low to moderate income businesses, businesses where the owner is a low to moderate income person from a low to moderate income household or employs a majority of people in low to moderate income households. This was funded with $1 million from the CARES Act that flowed to the state of New York. And then the state set up a program that allowed for counties to apply for funding. We applied for an allocation of $1 million, received that. We have already moved through the first $950,000 of that $1 million commitment from the state, and we've contemplated and asked to this committee and to the legislature to approve an authorization to match the $1 million that was committed by the state. We have over $4 million in interest expressed through an interest form that we have, and an unfunded $500,000 or $600,000 currently that we could almost immediately make awards for. And the idea here is to help these small businesses that often weren't able to access some of the programs at the federal level. So happy to talk about it more. I think we'll get a chance to give that presentation at some point, but just wanted to make it clear that we've given a lot of thought to this and see it as a logical step to support our business community.
Thank you very much. So for anybody who's just joined us, we're in a bit of an open forum moment here to talk about best use of these funds. So if anybody else has thoughts.
Chris's hand was up, and then Manna, and then Phil.
Thank you so much. So who is the next person? Eve?
Chris.
Chris
Kelly.
Hey, Chris. Thank you.
Hey, how are you? I definitely want to echo pretty much everyone's comments in terms of geographic diversity. It's a very large county, and we think that you'll see the programs tonight in terms of small business relief as well as the nonprofit program. Geography is certainly going to be taken into consideration. To legislator Corcoran's comment about collecting the information 6-7 months ago, that was instrumental in us kind of developing some of the non-for-profit programming. And that's what Nate and the rest of the ARP team will be speaking on tonight. We are also working on creating just kind of this level set where, yes, there was this ARP plan that was presented by the executive to the legislature, and that created the buckets. There's also the 50 or 60 items that came from the respective caucuses from the last body. We're just about done. Our team already did the work. I'm just reviewing it, and then we'll share that. And I think one of the lessons learned from this whole process, so we received the money about 9 months ago. And we have been deliberating very actively on the best uses. We've also been learning about the legislation. I know Comptroller Gallagher has assisted us in understanding just some of the guidance and how that was shifting and how we can, you know, for some of the money, we can actually free it from a lot of the restrictions that were originally provided. So we feel like we're in a very good position. We feel like we've had a lot of engagement with not just the legislature, but also all of our municipal partners. It doesn't mean that that stops, though. And I think we all have to put it on ourselves as participants here and as leaders to continue those conversations. All of the good ideas have not been surfaced yet. But that doesn't mean, and I want to say this pretty strongly, that the ideas that we have agreement on in terms of making affordable housing or mental health and substance use disorder or relief for small business a priority, because that's where the conversation has always been. Now, the projects that come from that, it's going to happen through these organic conversations that we have amongst each other, but also within your districts. So we're going to rely upon you guys in the southern part of the district, in the northern part, in Kingston, and in the western side to help feed us these projects, to give us that information. We're ready to collect. We're ready to talk to you guys. But we do think the programs that we're designing now and that we're presenting on tonight do have that countywide impact. The legislation specifically calls out assistance for non-for-profits. It specifically calls out assistance to small business, non-for-profits, as well as housing. And those are some of the things that we're leading with tonight. So I just want to say I really do look forward to working with all of you. I think this is a great setup. And I just want to thank Chair Bartels for kind of facilitating this and pushing this forward. So thank you.
Thank you very much. So next we have Legislator Green and Legislator Earners on deck.
Thank you. I just want to remind folks that we are in the middle of an increasing, exacerbating global climate crisis, and I want to be sure that this money is spent in a way that promotes climate solutions and doesn't in any way exacerbate the climate crisis that we are collectively facing. That's especially true in housing. That will also be true in support to our business community. There are ways of doing all these things that will absolutely reduce emissions and promote carbon sequestration and really have to be rolled in. And I think that each project should be evaluated to be sure that it is essentially either carbon neutral or providing a solution. And if it's going to harm the environment, that is not where we should be putting our money. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Legislator Green. Legislator Erner.
Chair Criswell. I just want to mention the Excluded Worker Fund. For those who don't know, that was a state program awarding $2.4 billion that came out in response to the pandemic. And it was a ground up effort to get that money because many of our state's most vulnerable workers, especially Black and Brown working families, had gotten shut out of safety net and any other kind of COVID relief from either the federal or state government. There's a new effort underway, which I'll be asking the full legislature to memorialize, to obtain an additional $3 billion for the state. Much of upstate didn't get any relief in the last round, and this already has support from the state legislators representing District 6, Cahill and Hinchey. And I'd like to put the bug in the ear of our county legislature and this committee to consider funding excluded workers as well. And in addition to the recommendation to speak with municipal leaders, also community groups who are aware of the need. This is a COVID response, it's a winter response, and the funds could go to things like housing, like food pantries. And I certainly support the idea of a structural change. And I also think the immediate need is so great that we need to consider both of those. Thank you.
Thank you for your thoughts. Okay, last call for anybody else who would like to speak. Okay, seeing none, I'm going to move on. So I just wanted to mention something that Comptroller Gallagher brought up, which was sort of monitoring of the spending. So we sent to the committee a tracker, which was a spreadsheet, and Clerk Feasters and I went through it, and we're going to redo it a bit. It was not quite as user-friendly as I think it could be, so we're going to revamp it a little bit, and we got some updated numbers as well. So we're going to be sending you an updated version of this, but basically what we're trying to do is show you total amount, show you the committed amount, show you what's been spent, and what's left. That sort of in the 35,000 foot view, that's basically what we're doing. But we will get as granular as you desire in terms of knowing exactly when the money has been spent and how much is left in certain pots. Because I think we need a really, really clear understanding of the funds as they're going out the door, and also what we've long-term committed to. Some of these projects are one-off projects that the faucet is closed. We don't have to think about it anymore. And other than the faucet's going to be on for the next 2 years. And so we have to be thinking about that as we're committing monies in other directions. So any other thoughts on what you need to see committee as a financial reporting? Okay, we'll update that and we'll get you that information. Clerk Feaster, did you want to add anything to that comment about financial tracking? Okay, great. So we are going to move on to the resolutions at this point. So I need a motion to open discussion for resolution 28.
Motion.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Legislator Walter, I want to recognize you.
Thank you. Thank you all. I'm very excited to be presenting my resolution as the first resolution for this group, and I'll try to set the stage following the parameters put out by Chair Criswell. So first of all, a quick background about what this is. These are for respite houses that serve individuals who are suffering from either mental health crisis or substance abuse crisis. And right now with the state licensure, they could be there from 7 to 10 days while they get their lives together. The idea of a respite house not only supports them and provides them the care during those time, during the 7 to 10 days, but also provides care navigation, care management after they're released, if they, not released, after they are done with that time period, as much as the individual wants. And an individual can come back and forth. They can, you know, request to come back to a respite house if they are finding they have need. The history behind this briefly is this came up a lot in the Criminal Justice Reform Task Force that I chaired for 2.5 years, I feel like it was, maybe it was just two. Recognizing a couple of things. One, that before COVID and especially during COVID, our mental health issues have gotten much worse. So have our opioid and other substance abuse issues have gotten much worse. We all know that we lost our beds at the, our inpatient beds at the hospital. But, and so the concept of what was needed, and also just a quick history, is that we have very little long-term inpatient in New York State for mental health. It just, it with deinstitutionalization happening many years ago, it's very hard to find a place, a stable place for someone that needs that kind of care. And so this was packaged together originally with the Crisis Stabilization Center, where the Crisis Stabilization Center would be a 24-hour immediate crisis response for people, again, with substance abuse or mental health crises. This was a need that we heard across the county. We heard it from law enforcement. We heard it from judges. We heard it from family members that there was nowhere for people to go, not only with our beds gone, but also just nothing like this. There is a program in Dutchess County, and I actually have law enforcement who travel all the way to Dutchess County sometimes with individuals because they have a program. And so Chair Criswell and I actually visited the Crisis Stabilization Center. We really tried to explore and understand it on how this can really fit the need for the county. So, and I also want to say with the respite houses at this point, it's 7 to 10 days. There's hopefully some legislation coming down from the state that will eventually make these 30 days, which will be even more helpful. So I'm going to go through the issue, the parameters that the chair had pointed out. So in terms of geographic spread, the goal is that while the Crisis Stabilization Center probably would be more centrally located, most likely in the Kingston area as that 24-hour, absolutely, the respite houses need to be able to meet the needs for the whole county. And so that the expectation in the resolution that had already passed was that they are geographically located in a way, in an area that's not being fully served. I will say that Orange County and Milton has a respite house. So the southern tier actually is probably the only part of Ulster County that has any access to a respite house now. But you know, definitely in areas such as Ellenville or up northern, and there's that is a requirement. I would love to see many of these respite houses, but I'll be happy with 8 beds at this point. In terms of its time sensitivity, well, so as you all know, and as I said earlier with COVID, this is a need. This is an absolute need, and COVID, which is one of the pieces of this funding, is does COVID make the problem worse? And COVID absolutely made the mental health problems worse and the substance abuse problems worse. So it fits exactly into that. Is there other funding? Currently, no, but the state is catching up and the state is getting on this. And hopefully the state will have funding for us, but I'm not gonna wait for them. I've been waiting for them to do prescription drug take backs for about 3 years now. And so I'm not gonna wait. I don't think we need to should wait, but hopefully they'll come around to it and actually be able to provide funding that helps support this. It was in the working group and I was in the health group. So in terms of specialty areas, in addition to being in the criminal justice, I'm an epidemiologist, and as part of the working group, we recognized that having respite houses was an important piece to delivering the necessary care for substance abuse and mental health. And then the last thing, which Chair Criswell, that maybe you want to include in your elements, is the sustainability. And so the whole idea of this being an RFP and partnering with an organization that can be licensed by the state, then once these are built with hopefully ARPA money, then it's fully self-sustainable because the services provided are fully reimbursable to the state, to that organization. So we won't, we will, so I think it, you know, it fits into that. Not to say that if something's not fully sustainable on its own, we shouldn't consider it, but in this case, it is highly sustainable. So my hope was originally, again, to lump this, not lump it, but include it with the Crisis Stabilization Center, which did get approved for ARPA funds. But it was, we kind of missed that. I don't know how Amber and I missed it, but we did. In the original resolution, so this resolution's already been approved, just not using ARPA funds. The last thing I'm gonna say, and Amber, correct me if I'm wrong, the amount is the ceiling, not the floor. It all depends on what we find. If we find that this county owns a couple of buildings that can be easily converted, it's gonna be less. If it's just using land that we own, it might be more. If the state comes down with some money, it might be less. So it won't be more than the amount that I'm requesting, but it can be easily less. And this particular resolution, and then I'll be quiet so that you can discuss it or ask questions, is to fund the building of these respite houses. We've already approved the resolution to do an RFP. This is just to build these, the actual entities. So it's more of a capital project. And with that, I will stop and see if there's any questions or comments.
Thank you. Committee members, questions? Legislator Maloney.
So I don't know a lot about this yet. I've been just reading what's here. There's not a lot of specifics. So we still don't know where exactly it's going to be?
No, the only parameters that I requested to have in the RFP is that the geographic is considered, and my personal feeling is it should not be in Kingston. I'm hoping for there to be two different houses, maybe two four-bed houses, but I think that Kingston is doing a lot right now in getting beds, so my preference is that these are not located in Kingston, that they're more spread out, but
we're going to own this, though.
So this is an interesting point. I don't want to take too much time, but, you know, one of the challenges we had when we moved mental health out of the county was we lost some ability to really stay on top of who's being served and how they're being served. It's very important to me and to the task force who developed this, that the county stays a partner with whoever gets this RFP. How that partnership looks, we have to, I think it still needs to be ironed out, but it needs to be a partnership. I would assume it's that we would own the building itself and they would be sort of leasers or renters. But I think that that has to be fine-tuned, what that partnership exactly looks like. It's not okay to just build it and hand it to some organization that wins the RFP and then it's on them. It needs to, it is very important to me, at least, that there's some partnership, because we need to know who's being served. We need to make sure the right people are being served. We need to know whether we need to make more of them. We need to understand what's going on with it.
Okay, so we'll be building it and then kind of funding it, because it's going to be services that pay. It'll be through DSS that would be funding the
no, well, it's fully
if funded, a not-for-profit takes over.
The non-for-profit would receive the funding directly from the state through their licensure. So we do not have to pay for the service.
It's tax dollars. So we have 8 individuals that will be served. There's a lot of question marks as far as how to get these buildings built and where to build them and then what to do after that. I also don't see a lot about criteria for being qualified to be in here. What's the criteria, and how many people right now? Is there 500 people? Is there 5,000 people that would fit the criteria? Because we're going to place 2 4 bedroom things somewhere in this huge county. We don't know a lot about it. And another concern I have is, once we approve this, do we as legislators lose? Is it just become an operational thing at that point? And then it's kind of done how it's done because we've already approved it. I just have a lot of questions. There's just so many questions here.
I think one of the things I would like to do, if I may, sir, is redirect the focus of this. We've already approved the building of these 2 respite houses. So that's, I think tonight what we're trying to decide on is it going to be ARPA funded? Correct me if I'm wrong, but that I think is what is this resolution this evening.
Okay.
It's not, are we going to? We are going to do this. That's already been decided.
And we did it that loosely last term.
Correct. That happened last term. Yeah.
All right.
I just want to focus that I appreciate your questions.
Okay.
Most of those questions have been vetted, and the full legislature voted to approve it. So what we're doing
I don't know if they were ever answered last term, but I wasn't here, but they're not being answered right now. But, and that's okay. I would say then, if that's the case, we're just talking about this isn't something that's for ARPA. I really think it should be 1 or 2 projects. I think we should have the RA over here and say, hey, if money is no object, $20-30 million.
Can I finish talking about this project now?
Yeah, that I am talking about this project as a reason. This is something the county should be working on, you know, with the state, obviously grant funded as much as we can. But to me, this is not what I have in mind for ARPA. I don't think it's what my constituents had in mind. Like I said, we should have a couple of massive projects. This, we're going to go right through this money and have not much, a lot of little things that we should be doing anyways, but not with ARPA. But that's my opinion.
Legislator Walter, I'm going to let Legislator Levine, he's had his hand up, and so then
I just wanted to answer 2 of those questions.
I will get right back to you, but let me get Legislator Levine.
I'd be happy to yield back to Legislator Walter to answer.
Yeah, I'll just say very briefly, first of all, it's not 8 people, it's 8 people who have 7 to 10 days, so it's multiplied, it's a lot. Second of all, we do know how many people are in desperate need. We can easily see how the one respite house is doing. So we clearly have a problem, and there's plenty of data showing it. And this is absolutely tied into the goals and objectives of the ARPA money, and it will serve a large number of people in a much, much needed way. Thank you.
Legislator Levine.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I thank Legislator Walter for her explanation on a lot of these things. It kind of answered some of the questions that I had regarding the resolution. The one other thing that I wanted to ask and see if it could be addressed would be if the demand, if the proposal for 8 beds turns out to be insufficient for the demand. If for whatever reason, you know, we have more people than what we have logistically feasible with 8 beds to serve. Is it possible that, in this funding, if we approve this ARPA funding for these facilities, is it possible that the facilities could be built under the understanding that for expansion at a future time, so that they could potentially be serving more beds, at the same time, if future funding becomes available, so that we wouldn't have to build a separate facility if future increased demand occurs?
Can I answer that?
Yes, please.
Yeah, I mean, I think the state is very well aware of how much this need is, and that can be that's seen in the fact that the program in Milton did receive some capital money from the state to expand it, just as you said, because they recognize that there's a need to grow. There's no way 8 beds is enough. We know that. It's just, you know, it's the tip of the iceberg. Ideally, what will happen is once we've established this, you know, that the state will be more forthcoming with funds to help us expand however we need it. Plus, I'll also say, and I mentioned it earlier, they are working on changing the law to increase up to 30 days, which will create even more support.
Thank you. I want to recognize Deputy Executive Ryder.
Yeah, I could just expand upon that answer really quick. I mean, the goal of these facilities is to keep them similar to residential houses. So you're not trying to build a large multi-unit. It's really 3 to 4 bedrooms, and having them placed throughout Ulster County makes a lot of sense. One thing we can do to try to keep expenses down is we can have finance look at our upcoming auction properties. We might find some 3-4 bedroom houses that would be suitable for this purpose. But I think if we find that there's a wait list and growing demand on this, the market will also assist. Because I've talked to organizations who have these, like the People USA down in Orange County, and, you know, they're willing to build these facilities, and they're fully reimbursable and licensed by the state. So as Legislator Walter said, operationally, they are already they're reimbursable, and there's really not a county cost. It's just looking at what the initial capital cost for seeding a couple of these are. And I think once they're successful, we'll see growth throughout the county.
Thank you very much. So to the committee, I just wanted to also remind you that we are going to be having a second meeting in a couple weeks. What the plan is, as I mentioned, we're going to have monthly meetings, but in the first, say, 4, maybe even 5 months of our committee meetings, we're going to front load an extra meeting in, just because we're basically drinking from a fire hose right now. We're trying to take in so much information, and we need a little bit of time to get up to speed. And what it will also allow is for us to get kind of ahead of the game. So we're going to be meeting before resolution deadlines, so we'll be able to kind of be ahead of things rather than where we are right now, which is catching up from behind. So I just wanted to remind that that's going to be happening. And at the end of this meeting, we'll talk about potential dates, not next week, but week following, so that we'll have a little bit of time to digest everything that happened tonight, take a breath, and then move things forward. So with that said, any other committee members have any comments on this resolution?
May I?
Yes, Legislator Green.
I just want to get clarity. Does it have to be built from scratch? Could it be acquired and renovated? And also, I want to be sure that anytime we are building, we're building for energy efficiency. And I keep not hearing that, so I keep bringing it back up to remind you.
Ring that bell. Ring that bell. Absolutely. Thank you for that. So, committee, what I'm going to recommend, and absolutely challenge me on this, but I'm going to recommend that we take no action on this tonight, and that we look at this again in 2 weeks, when we meet in 2 weeks. Do we need to vote on that, or do I get feedback from the committee? Do you agree that we take no action on this evening and look at it again in 2 weeks?
I'm okay with
yes?
that.
Yeah. All right. That's what we're going to do. So thank you. Moving on to resolution 29. Do I have a motion to open this for discussion?
I'll make the motion.
Second, please.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much. This is funding capital project number 601. It's the ARP Small Business and Economic Recovery. Somebody from the executive team going to speak on this? Is this to you, Mr. Wiedemann?
Yeah, I think I'll take it. Kate Heidecker, my deputy, was hoping to join, but she's got another presentation, so she had to leave. So I will take the reins. And if it's okay with the group, I'll do a quick PowerPoint presentation. There's a bunch of information and data in here I'd like to share, if that's okay.
Amber, can he take the screen? Yes, that's fine.
Oh, it looks like I can. Great. So I mentioned this at the outset. We've had a program going now for a couple of months called Ulster County Cares, funded by CARES Act funds through the New York State Office of Homes and Community Renewal. It's a community block grant, community development block grant funded. And so the goals of that program relate to low-income small businesses, supporting them as they adapt to recover from the pandemic. And so what we're proposing in a nutshell is to match the state's allocation of $1 million with $1 million of our ARPA funds here at the local level to continue this program and basically double the number of businesses that we can support during this difficult time. So I'll run you through some details just about the program, how it was set up, really recognizing that all of Ulster County's businesses were impacted during the pandemic, continue to be impacted, but the most severe and lasting impacts are those that are occurring to our low-income business owners and their employees, most particularly because they lack access to traditional flexible capital. They often have a difficult or troubled credit history that makes it hard for them to access loans. They have previous fiscal distress in either their business or in their personal life, smaller profit margins often on their small businesses, and sometimes a lack of access to education and training to support their business's growth. And a reminder that about 95% of Ulster County's businesses have less than 25 employees. That's the population that's eligible for this program if they meet the income needs, and about 47% of Ulster County's total population would meet the income thresholds for low to moderate income. So the first round of this, we awarded up to $35,000 for businesses that created or restored one or more full-time equivalent job. The funding was meant to help them adapt to the new reality of economic life with a highly contagious virus, and that was per the requirements of the CARES Act funding, largely consistent with the requirements of the ARPA funds as well. The funds provided reimbursement for up to 100% of eligible project costs. Generally speaking, any working capital related costs were eligible costs. Businesses could pay for either past due rent or advance pay on rent. They could pay payroll. In the case of some of our sole proprietors, which there are a number of, and they often find it hard to be eligible for programs that have existed prior, they can even take an owner's draw. If they haven't paid themselves over the course of the pandemic, they can actually do that with these funds. It's different than the other supports that have been out there, the PPP, the EIDL, the Restaurant Revitalization Fund. A lot of those programs were targeted at slightly larger, more sophisticated businesses, and we found in our conversations throughout the life of the pandemic that many local businesses, especially the smallest ones, the most disadvantaged in our county, weren't able to take advantage of those funds. It's also income qualifying, so again, the business owner has to be low to moderate income household, or their majority of their employees do, and 100% of the project costs can be covered with this program. So we received 335 pre-applications over the last 2 months, indicating interest from 335 businesses. Of those, we then sent a full application to them, first weeding out those that aren't in Ulster County or were not-for-profits, which are not eligible for this fund. Hence, I think the discussion that we'll have later about a separate fund and program for not-for-profits. And we whittled that down to 178 that were sent the full submission, full application, and that have been working on their submissions. 132 of those have completed the full application. So far, with the first round of the program, we've awarded 29 grants or packages of assistance, and we have two remaining that we're just waiting for some final funding allocations from the state on this first round before we can make awards. So in total, that represents $542,000 or almost $543,000 of funding in our first round, $320,000 that we're working on now, for a total of $862,000 that's been awarded. We also have just received word from the state that we can use a pot of the money that was for administrative costs that we have not incurred to make additional direct awards to businesses. And so that'll climb to $950,000 in the next week or two. The remaining full applications that we have on hand total $438,000. So we have applications from businesses that have qualified for this program, but we cannot fund with available funds. We have $440,000 or so of those. And then in the pre-applications, that 323, there's an indication of need for about $5.5 million. So there's a tremendous need out there from these businesses that continue to struggle with the pandemic. So the idea here would be to continue that program to award small, low-income businesses with additional funding through an allocation of $1 million of the American Rescue Plan Act funds towards that project, which would allow us to assist approximately 30 additional businesses. And we feel that there's a way to sustain this program to a third round even. We had a conversation with the state about their CDBG program. They have some additional CARES funding available. They had indicated that they may be willing to accept another application from us, but that wouldn't be until spring. And I think, you know, our intent here is to demonstrate to the state that we're not just turning to them for assistance. We're also looking to double down on our investment through our ARP funds. But we feel pretty confident that once we do that, we'd have a competitive advantage to go back to the state and ask for a third round through the CARES fund to bring the total assistance that we can provide to $3 million of financial relief, helping probably 100 businesses and potentially saving 300 jobs in the county. And a reminder that these are, you know, again, these are very small businesses, ones that struggle, that often kind of fall below the radar in a lot of the work that that we do in economic development. And we're thrilled to have an opportunity to support them and help them transition during this difficult time. So if this resolution is approved, what it really means is that we can immediately move forward to fund an additional 30 businesses. We have them in the pipeline for the application process. We're not proposing to change the eligibility requirements, although ARPA would allow for more flexible funding. We have this pipeline of demand from businesses that really need this, and we would hope in February or early March to be able to start allocating that money and making those awards. That's my quick synopsis. Happy to take questions.
Thank you. I had a couple questions. One of them had to do with administrative costs. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought I saw $50,000 in admin costs and $100,000 in program delivery costs. Could you talk about those?
Yep, that's the breakdown that we used in our first round of application to the state. Out of $1 million, 15% of it was for a combination of admin, 5% or $50,000. That's just to cover the administrative cost of processing applications. And then $100,000 was earmarked for marketing, technical support to applicants, counseling for applicants. What we found is that through a partnership with our kind of longstanding partnership with SBDC, we can provide counseling to these businesses if they need it without a cost. SBDC is a free service, so we can take advantage of that. We haven't needed to actively market the program. We've done work through the Chamber of Commerce, through our own email list, and then targeted outreach to municipal leaders and community leaders throughout the county. And as a result, we've had, I think, 13 of the 19 towns have been represented in the awards so far, and will make concerted efforts to surface applicants in the remaining six towns. And so those are the admin program delivery costs. In the first round that we got from the state, we realized we didn't need the program delivery, so we actually asked for a real allocation of that $100,000 of program delivery to direct awards. We wanted to structure this second ask to be like the first ask to the state. The ask to the ARPA funds is for $850,000 for direct assistance, $100,000 for program delivery, and $50,000 for admin. We would hope that if we continue to see the demand that I indicated that we have so far, that we wouldn't need to expend that program delivery cost, so we would be able to come back and reallocate that $100,000 to direct assistance.
Thank you. Legislator Green, did you have a question? Okay, thank you. Questions? Legislator Bartels.
Thank you. So maybe I should know this, but how did you confirm whether or not the businesses that received the awards, how did you confirm whether or not they, or did you confirm whether or not they received other funds? Is that in the application?
Good question. If I might, the application and the funding program through the state, the CARES funding through the state, requires the completion of a duplication of benefits worksheet. So we do ask them what else they've received. And when it comes to they basically state their total need of funds. And if they've received some funds from other sources, they have to subtract that from their total need. And if there's a remaining balance, then they can be awarded funds. If there's no remaining balance of need, then they cannot be awarded funds.
If I may, so how are they calculating the need? Are they calculating it based on a differential in income, in money in, or how is that need calculated?
No, good question. But we found that a number of businesses, there are, you know, I think everybody knows a few of these businesses that have started since 2019 that really struggled with some of the initial programs that required you to show a loss between 2019 and 2020. And so we designed this not to require a kind of threshold of loss of income as an eligibility criteria, but instead the documentation of need for funding. And so explain the situation that you're in, the costs that you've incurred, show us your available resources. We collect financials and tax returns, and again, verify that they're not duplicating benefits with other programs. And then if there's still a remaining need, that's what these funds would go towards.
So I'm sorry, does that mean that the need is to some degree is self-reported? Because if it's not based on a differential from the previous year, then how is the need actually verified against? I get it if it's a startup business, yep. But short of a startup, how is the need actually verified against previous years?
So the need is self-reported in the sense that these are businesses that make a statement as to what their need is and how it relates to the impact of the pandemic. And so, you know, I'll give one example that's just top of mind, Alleyway Ice Cream, which is an ice cream retailer up in Saugerties that recently opened. And they struggled in the pandemic because they were forced to close their retail establishment. They applied for funds in order to buy equipment to do wholesale. And so it's adapting to the new circumstances where retail alone can be very vulnerable and risky for a small business like that. And so, you know, this is a little different from programs that explicitly look at loss of revenue or loss of funds. This is about trying to find ways to help our businesses that are needy businesses by virtue of the fact that they're low to moderate income owners adapt to the new world of the pandemic.
If I may, just two more questions. So a couple things. If you could provide the application, a blank example of the application that was required for the CARES Act, that would be helpful. And a draft of the application that you're proposing to use, if there's any difference from the CARES Act application. And then also, just speaking for myself, it would be helpful to have. You just gave one example of a business that received the funding. It would be helpful to know which businesses received the funding and to understand how these funds impacted their businesses. That would help to paint a more clear picture of what's happening.
Understood, and I'm happy to share. We have I think there's a few of the most recent ones that aren't on the summary that I have in front of me right now, but I can make sure that those are added and then send that around.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Legislator Sperry.
Thank you for your presentation. And just kind of piggybacking off of what Chair Bartels just said, I was curious to know, obviously there's a lot of need and you had a lot of applications, and just wondering what industries are at the most need right now. Like, is it, you know, hospitality? Is it housing? Is it construction? Like small, you know, it would be good to know what categories of business have the most need at this moment, because I think that that's also going to help us to understand where needs are within things that we might want to be funding through ARPA funding for other things. So I don't know if it's possible for you to share with us like the data that you have and kind of break it down in category.
Yeah, I think it would be helpful, and I'm sorry I don't have it in a format that I can share easily right now, but I can certainly send it around through Legislator Criswell to the list of the businesses that were in the first two rounds that were funded through the state funding. And I think it gives a really good sense of the diversity here. It is a lot of restaurants and hospitality establishments. It's also health and wellness providers and you know, kind of a wide range of other kind of miscellaneous businesses. And so I think as I share that list, you'll get a sense of the demand out there. And it's, you know, every one of them immediately, you know, kind of resonated, at least with me, about why this would be a business that would find it difficult to adapt in a kind of post-pandemic world. So I think you'll see, as I have, that this is, I think, tapping into a deep need that's out there that's really, a challenge for a lot of these small businesses.
Thank you.
I was curious, if we do fund this with ARPA funds, could this be used as a kind of a match, a challenge you know, for some sort of a match or matching program? So I know you talked about additional funds being available, but yeah, something that's really like a direct, like 3-to-1 match or something like that.
That's the intent. I think, you know, the way the state works with their community development block grant funds, I don't think that they really explicitly would call it that, but we've been told through the conversations we've had with OCR that they, you know, that they would find it compelling if we could come back with a second ask that includes a match from the county. And so this would represent that match. We've received $1 million from them so far to match that with $1 million from the county, and then to go back to the state for a third million feels like a compelling way to argue that this is not just a handout, this is a request to leverage funding from the county with additional state funding.
That's great, thank you very much. You know, I think the one comment that I've heard consistently is that, you know, we're really interested in making sure that this funding is seed funding that's going to have long-term effects. So I think also in your reporting, if you can just somehow talk about some of the long-term implications that some of this funding could have with these businesses, I think that would be helpful in the argument. Any other questions? Did I hear Legislator Walter?
Yeah, Legislator Maloney had his hand up first, and Legislator Walter had her hand up second.
Thank you, Legislator Maloney.
Thank you. I got a couple of quick questions and comments. One is, this kind of stuff always makes me uncomfortable, government getting involved in this, and the parameters are important to make sure. I will remind everyone, and this is a conversation for the future to keep having, that the executive side of the government is day-to-day operations. We, you know, Chairwoman Bartels is asking some great questions, trying to get down to the bottom of how this is being decided, how much is discretion is being used, what is the overall approach. I think the legislature probably should have been involved in that to begin with, but we are where we are. One thing I heard when, with regards to parameters that made me a little uncomfortable is I would have thought that there would have been approach. This is helping businesses that are failing because of the pandemic, but it sounds like we're actually funding businesses that started very close to the pandemic. How do we know they're failing because of the pandemic? It might, we might have a feeling for it, but that's not good enough for me. I feel as though one of the parameters should have been, you should have been in business for several years before the pandemic, because this is all about the future. And if we're going to subsidize businesses with tax dollars, we should be ensuring that these businesses are going to exist in the future. So the fact that businesses are starting up and we're paying them as they fail as startups makes me very nervous, and I wonder about that decision. Another question I have is with regards to how are we vetting them? We're all reading stories every day about COVID funds being abused, and I like to trust people, but you have to verify. We have the comptroller sitting here. Maybe they have some ideas, but how have we gone back and made sure, especially as you're talking about spending another $1 million, looks like a lot of time and energy goes into this, which concerns me about day-to-day operations, but we've done it. Have we gone back and vetted? Do we have some mechanism of control to make sure that we're not – I'll tell you right now, if we're giving money out to over 100 people, I guarantee there's some people that are getting the money that don't necessarily fit what we want to do, or and maybe even be abusing the situation. How do we know before we go forward that – what are we doing to vet it? Some of the things I heard was almost trusting, well, if they were getting money from somewhere else, they had to minus that off. Well, do we have a way to check that? And have we been checking it? If you could touch upon a couple of the concerns I have, especially with the fraud aspect and the also the startup business that might not be a good business. We're already government getting involved in the private sector in a way that makes me a little uncomfortable. And now we're picking and choosing winners, maybe businesses that are just failing because they're failing. Maybe and now we're going to go, well, they would have made it if it wasn't for COVID, so we'll keep them going.
Thank you so much for those points. Tim, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, if you don't mind, I'll just quickly respond and happy to have more conversation about this. But the first thing on questions and concerns about fraud, I should mention explicitly, which I didn't, that this is a reimbursement grant program. So applicants come forward on a first come first served basis, documenting that they are eligible for the funds per the requirements of the state. Once they're awarded, then they go out and spend the money that they've documented under a contract that we have with them, and they submit receipts and verification of expense. and then they are reimbursed for those funds. So, you know, I think just to clarify, Legislator Maloney, there is documentation to back up the expenses. That expense occurs before there's an actual payment made to the awardees. And then why fund new businesses? I would point out that most of the awardees have been in business for longer than 3 years. But I think it's important to recognize that the businesses that were founded in 2019, 2020, even 2021 are important to our local economy. These are businesses that have struggled to, and they have often been ineligible for other sources of support. And honestly, if we want to continue to have a thriving economy, we need to support our startup businesses in addition to our established businesses.
Thank you, sir. Legislator Walter.
Thank you. So we do know that with the pandemic, small businesses owned by Black owners probably closed at double the rate of those by white owners. Do you have a parameter that specifically addresses this with a special attention to those businesses? Can you speak on that, on how you're addressing that?
Sure. Our primary method to address that, which I agree with entirely, and I think the data bears it out, has been to do targeted outreach to minority and women-owned businesses and veteran-owned businesses to make sure that they're aware of this program. Again, as a first-come, first-served with strict eligibility requirements established by the state, we don't feel that there's a way for us to impose additional eligibility requirements, but we've tried to compensate for that by doing targeted outreach to make sure that those populations and those business owners are aware of the program. And I think it bears out with a substantial number of the businesses that have been awarded so far as either minority or women-owned businesses or veteran-owned businesses.
Thanks. When you give the other information, do you think you can provide that information too?
Yep.
Great, thank you. Any other committee, Legislator Litz?
Yes, thank you. Unfortunately, what Tim forgot to mention is this program is reimbursed by the state, funded through the state, and it is vetted. It's done through the EDA. So, and there are two legislators that sit on the EDA, and the money is not appropriated or funded to those applicants until they've been gone through a vetted process. They've been looked at by the county attorney. Then it goes to the state, and the state vets it. And if the state approves it, it comes down. Then EDA votes on it. And then once it's all approved in that manner, those many steps, then the applicant is awarded the money. So it's vetted several times, not only at the county level, not only by legislative people on the board, not only by the county attorney, but also by the state of New York, long before they issue any money.
Thank you for
adding that. And I know that the businesses in my area that have been awarded the money are businesses that have been in business for over 20 years.
Thank you, sir. Any other committee members have any questions? All righty. I am Legislator Bartels.
I just wanted to add, if it wasn't included, Tim, when you provide the list of businesses, can you also provide the geographic location of each of them? Thank you.
Thank you. So to the committee, I'm going to recommend that we take no action on this tonight and revisit it in 2 weeks. Is that all right with all the committee members? Yes, I see thumbs up.
Sure. Do we need a motion to table or?
I don't know. I think we're just going to take no action. So hearing no objection, we're going to take no action on that. We're going to move on to Resolution 30. Do I hear a motion for discussion for Resolution 30?
Motion.
Second, please.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Mr. Kelly, are you going to be talking to us about this resolution?
I'm here to speak on this. I work closely with Deputy Executive Kelly. My name is Nate Litwin. I'm the Director of Recovery and Resilience. colloquially referred to as the ARPA team. I'm here. I believe they were here in the beginning. I hope they made it this far. I have two colleagues as part of this ARPA team, Molly and Ashley. We've been working since the end of November. By way of introduction, we are employees, of course, of Ulster County. We are in the Ulster County Finance Department, work also closely with Bert Golnick, and are an administrative division. So
it's nice to meet you. I think we've heard all about you, and now we're putting names and faces. And so thank you very much for being here tonight.
Great. And I just, of course, wanted to make sure everybody understands my role and our role. It's very nice to meet you. It's very excited to be here to present something we've worked on. And with that, I'd love to jump into also a PowerPoint that I think will take you through our resolution.
Please do so.
Okay. So. There we go. Okay, so everybody should be able to see that where they're looking at Ulster County Finance Department Division of Recovery and Resilience, Nonprofit Recovery and Resilience Grant. That is what we're discussing tonight and I'm presenting on regarding resolution number 30 and funding of $1.5 million. That would be a start for this would fund for this grant. So program overview, we're asking for $1.5 million to be made available to Ulster County nonprofit organizations. So this is a grant specific for nonprofits. Funding will be awarded at levels between $5,000 and just under $50,000. This will allow for at least 30 separate awards. Nonprofits, and this is as it's defined by the U.S. Treasury rules, would be 501c3, so that's charitable organizations, or 501c19, which is veteran services organizations, and was recently put into this definition by the Treasury rules. So those are the two types of nonprofits that are eligible for the grant. The nonprofits who apply must have a bricks and mortar physical presence in Ulster County and primarily serve the residents of the County of Ulster. Nonprofits must be an established organization in operation for at least a year prior to January 27th, 2020. And we chose that date because that's the date U.S. Treasury uses in creating regulations for ARPA funds as the date for start of the coronavirus pandemic. Applicants cannot be a municipality, school district, private, or religious school. The program purpose. So we wish to, with the grant, we wish to provide economic relief to Ulster County nonprofits who have been negatively impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. There will be two applicant pathways. And so this is one of those pathways. We're calling it the recovery application for economic nonprofits that have been negatively impacted. Also, another applicant pathway is to build the organizational capacity of Ulster County nonprofits so they can meet increased community needs as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. This is a second application, the resilience application, which is more of programs to meet expanded community need that has also occurred. The program purpose follows the outcome of completed community outreach done in the summer of 2021 and is as described in the Ulster County Recovery and Resilience Plan completed in June 2021. This grant is an initial funding round to nonprofits and does not include funding for capital investments. I mention that because in the Recovery and Resilience Plan that was written up for Ulster County in June 2021, there was an identified need for capital investments. We hope for success in this first round and hope to, based on anything learned through doing the grant, we hope to include capital investments into the future. But for now, we're just looking to help nonprofits with the needs on the ground for loss of revenue and for heightened community need. So to dive a little bit deeper into what the recovery application is, it provides funds to nonprofits who have had declines in revenue. This includes overall declines in revenue or specific losses due to inability to hold fundraising events. They have had rent, mortgage, utility, or overhead costs that have gone unpaid since January 27th, 2020. They have had payroll and benefit costs that have gone unmet after March 3rd, 2021. This includes rehiring, laid off staff, or reinstating any cut to benefits or pay. They have been unable to increase staff salaries since March 3rd, 2021. Nonprofits can apply to increase staff salaries first by a 2022 cost of living COLA adjustment of 5.9%. Second, they can apply to increase salaries by 3% above the 2022 COLA amount. Funds will be one time, and nonprofits are instructed to provide information on how funding will create long-term recovery. So the second application pathway for community need, this provides funding for 13 project categories. And this is just the titles of these categories: arts and culture, education, healthy childhood environments, housing, job training, mental health, food access, public health, substance use and behavioral health prevention and education, senior transit assistance, technology upgrades, underserved children and youth programs, assistance, and veteran services. I'm not going to read all of this, of course, but this is part of the package that I gave to the special committee. And this is our Schedule A that breaks down each of those 13 categories. So I urge the committee to read this. And if there's any questions, this will help define what each of those categories are. We recognize, and of course, this is just draft applications, but we have done a lot of work and are ready to release as soon as funding is hopefully approved. And upon release of this nonprofit grant, we recognize that there are some nonprofits who could be in need of both economic relief and program funding because there's increased community need. So that's why we've allowed for combined applications, which would essentially mean that a nonprofit could finish and complete both applications, submit them to us. Of course, the total of both applications cannot be above the award ceiling for the grant. So receipt of funding and reporting. For awards of $10,000 or less, funding will be distributed upfront after contract signing and receipt of the organization's invoice. For awards over $10,000, half of the funding is distributed up front and the remaining half is distributed after receipt of expenditure documentation and fulfillment of reporting requirements for the initial 50%. All funding is subject to submission of proof of expenditure documentation. Funds must be expended by the nonprofit within 1 year of the date of contract. And the proposed timeline, this is, we hope to move as quickly as we can on this, given the need we see in the community. So February 16th, we've put, which is the date after the February legislative meeting, and that's the earliest date we have to issue this RFA, request for application. 2 weeks after our application is issued, we plan to have an information webinar. We want our nonprofits to be well informed of the requirements of this grant and provide good applications. So we will be providing that opportunity for nonprofits. 2 weeks prior to application deadline is a deadline for applicant questions. And we will post questions and answers. We will write them up and post for all prospective applicants and their benefit. March 31st, 2022, we hope to have our application deadline, and summer of 2022, we hope to provide awards to winning applicants. So, let me just get back here.
Thank you.
That's an overview, and I am happy to answer any questions.
Great. I had a couple quick questions, then I'll open up to other committee members. One of them had to do with the timeline that you just presented. If that end date was moved a month further, is that going to do any drastic changes to your process?
It will put us back a month, but it's not going to be the end of the world. I think the largest thing, of course, is that we need funding from the legislature. So we're in the hands of the legislature, and we're happy to work with you to see how this can be done.
Thank you. The other question I had was, you know, we had a program called Legislative Programs for many years, and there's monies that are allocated for legislative programs. And I'm wondering why these funds are not connected to those legislative program dollars that are already allocated.
Peter, if I may?
Yes.
So I think this is meant to capture a broader audience and have a competitive application process. This is kind of fed from, I think, to Legislator Corcoran's point earlier of just having a more competitive and broader county focus here. And I think a competitive call for applications to see what we surface. We may see that we're not getting the usual kind of suspects here that typically apply for funds. We're trying to do the low dollar, the 5,000, so we can capture some of these other non-for-profits that may not have been surfaced to us in the past.
I appreciate that. And I want to say, I think that was the direction, and Legislator Corcoran can confirm this, that we were trying to head with legislative program dollars, so that we were trying to spread the monies into all directions in Ulster County and try and, you know, just cast a wider net of who we were looking at. So I think we had the same objectives for where we were going to be heading with this legislative programs allotment that was happening in this fiscal year. Questions from the committee? Any committee members have questions? Okay, Legislator Malone.
So if I'm understanding, this is similar to the last resolution. It's just about non-for-profits that have struggled through COVID?
Yes, that's correct.
All right. I just feel like we could take the tax dollars, even that we're spending doing this, and the tax dollars that we're going to, $5,000, $10,000, we could take that and actually give it to a non-for-profit to do the work of the people than just kind of picking and choosing and sprinkling around a little bailout to a non-for-profit. I assume this is going to get tabled too. I'm going to need more time to kind of work through this, but it feels, I don't know.
Can you clarify what you just said? I actually just didn't.
So we're kind of, so non-for-profit, if I'm understanding it, non-for-profits are going to come to us and they're going to say, hey, I struggled through COVID. I wasn't able to raise funds. Like I'm now behind on my rent. There's certain non-for-profits that are struggling. We go, okay, I'll get you up to speed. But that's not really helping anyone. It's helping pay their bills, their rent or something, or for a non-for-profit. Some have made it through COVID. So we're spending money on a non-for-profit, but we're really not getting services out of it at this moment. Not sure that's what ARPA, once again, I'll be, you know, pushing this in caucus that we need big, long-term, you know, and there's not enough money to do 50 of these things, in my opinion, but that's just how I feel. And
thank you. Thank you so much for that clarification. Deputy Executive Kelly, and then I'm going to go to Chairwoman.
So I just want to be very clear on this. The program is designed based on the language in the bill. So it's a called for use of ARPA funds, and it was the intention of Congress to use funds for these purposes. When we're talking about COLA or the different adjustments, it's language from the final rule regarding this. So this is not something, it's also based on many conversations with community foundations, Dyson Foundations, United Way, Arts Mid-Hudson. A lot of different conversations have gone into recognizing a need in the nonprofit community. Many of them shuttered their doors. Many of their donors were not giving. So I think that this is actually one of the specific called for uses. And I do think that this is a very appropriate use to help these community organizations.
Thank you. And I appreciate you reminding us that there are federal guidelines for this spending that we need to continually use as the mirror for what we're doing. So we just have to keep going back to those guidelines.
If I just quickly could respond to, because he kind of made it sound like I was saying this wasn't what ARPA funds, this is not what I want to do with ARPA funds. We don't, there's a million things that we could do.
Noted. Thank you so much. Chairwoman Bartels.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think Legislator Maloney is sort of, you know, raising the discussion point that these are going to be difficult decisions. You know, yes, it's an allowed use, but as I said at the start, I believe that there's more need than there is funds. So at some point, we're going to have to make difficult decisions about, you know, which projects we fund, and that really requires that. You know, that zoom out. My question about this one is really back to need. You know, we've talked about not-for-profits that had to shutter, and certainly many of them did during the height of the pandemic and probably have come back around to not. But I'm looking at the application, and what I'm concerned about is how we verify the need, or is this not need-based first? Because as I'm looking at this application, I'm not seeing in this one even really the necessity of the proof of the need. You know, there are questions about did you, you know, how were you affected? Not did you suffer a loss? And I guess my question is that an important question? Do we want to confirm that there were losses that we're trying to, or are we trying to strengthen organizations that may not have suffered a loss but can do more? And I'm posing that as a question because I don't know the answer in terms of what we're looking to achieve with this.
Deputy Executive Kelly, you want to respond to that or?
Nate, you want this one?
Yeah. So one thing I want. Number one, just we hope to be, as the ARPA division, we hope to be like become the expert on the legislative rules. We recognize that there is a lot there. I saw in the special committees some of the packet that was given out. There's 700 pages there, 400 of which were the final rule. The final rule just came out weeks ago, so Treasury's been obviously writing and doing a lot, and there's a lot of information there. I hope everybody does have the chance to honestly read the final rule, but it is quite a tome. If you read it, I think you'll find that it's actually amazingly non-restrictive. It's so broad, this ARPA funding. You know, there's so many ways it can be used that is one reason why those regulations are there and why it's gone to such length. But when you get through it all, the major thing the federal government wants is for the funds to be used. And they've made it unprecedentedly easy to do. And I say easy, don't think I say that loosely, because I know that this comes with oversight. I guess I want to make the point with that introduction that nonprofits are beneficiaries under the federal rules. And that is different than these other designations that I think this committee will start to hear, such as subrecipients. Subrecipients, you know, carries a lot more weight and requires a contract and requires a lot of number of other things. Beneficiary is exactly what the deputy executive said is one of the types of organizations that the federal government wants this money to go for and has made it exceedingly simpler to give to. And I think one way to understand that is that there was obviously in CARES Act and other programs, there was money given to individuals directly through the federal government. And this is a little bit of the federal government's opportunity, creation of that opportunity for nonprofits. So we don't want to hold it up. We really want to get it out there. We do want to do our due diligence, and we do want to make sure it's not misused. But we also want to follow the step of the federal government in making it as easy as they've outlined for us to do. So I hope that
Nate, are you going to create us a beautiful one-page boiled down version of the final rules?
I certainly hope so. But I don't know. That could take a long time. I'd love to.
Just put that on your to-do list. How's that said? No, I actually attended a meeting today that was the National Association of Counties, and it was all about the final rules and talking about the ways that they have actually opened them up and broadened some of the language. So yeah, I think it's important that as a committee, we at least have some, you know, working knowledge of what these final rules are. And it's a lot of information, but I sent you all the link today so you can look on that that National Organization of Counties website. And it's very clear actually about what the changes were from the initial to the final. And I think you'll find that useful. I want to keep moving us along because I'm aware of the time. It's 7:15. So is there any more discussion on this? Yes, Comptroller Gallagher.
Hi to the ARPA team. Welcome to Ulster County. I did look at the application, and I'm pleased to see that you're asking things for things like, you know, have you applied for a PPP loan? And I see that you're asking for the percentage breakdown of charitable support that the organization gets. And I want to just say we are in a unique position in Ulster County with respect to the Novo Foundation, which is the size of a small city in its annual spending. I urge you to directly ask how much Novo support each organization is getting and what the future commitment is, because many times Novo is granting on a multi-year basis, which is terrific, but it's something that you might want to take into consideration. Just asking the percentage of charitable support in a current given year's operating budget is not really sufficient for the long-term you know, planning for these organizations. So I probably have other thoughts on the application, especially coming from my community foundation CEO hat. And I would be happy to work with you guys on that. I don't want to take too much time tonight. Thanks.
Thank you. Legislator Sperry, I saw your hand.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to ask the same question that I asked him earlier, is if you could give us some indication of the types of nonprofits that are in need. I'm not sure if you have data from people that have expressed interest already, but again, I think it would be good for us to understand like categories of nonprofits that are in need so that we can assess, you know, what the need is as far as this program.
Thank you. I also want to recommend, I shared a document with Deputy Executive Kelly a while back, which was a matrix that the legislative programs team had come up with to look at possible funding against, and it really did have a good set of questions. And I don't know if you shared that, Deputy Executive, but I think we worked hard on that, and I want to make sure that it goes somewhere and is useful.
Yes, we will do that.
Great. Thank you very much. All right, I'm going to move us along here, and with the other resolutions, I'm going to suggest that tonight we take no action on this, unless I hear any objections. All right, moving on. Resolution 31. Do I hear a motion to discuss?
So moved.
Movement. A movement. Yeah, thank you. And a second, please.
Second.
All in favor? Great. Thank you. All right, so discussion, and this is the funding capital project number 602, ARP infrastructure and trails. Who is going to speak to that? Yes, Deputy.
So we have Kevin O'Connor from REFCO and his team.
Perfect. Kevin, you want to take the reins?
Sure. Be happy to have a PowerPoint presentation. With your permission, I'll share the screen.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Trust you're not saying it yet. Let's see. First. You're seeing that?
Yes, we see it. Thank you.
Sorry about the delay. So, yeah, Chairperson Criswell, members of the legislature and colleagues, thank you for the opportunity. Given the housing crisis and the plight of the homeless that we are experiencing, we've seen an opportunity to partner with Family of Woodstock and Catholic Charities to purchase the Quality Inn to provide supportive permanent housing and supportive housing for the homeless. I'm joined tonight by Michael Berg and Shannon Kelly. I believe they're still with me, as well as my colleagues, Emily Hamilton and Kristen Wilson. The hotel is for sale. We have it in a purchase sale agreement, and we're currently at the end of our due diligence period. So there is some critical timing to this request. The need for homeless housing in Ulster County is stark. It has been for many years, and it includes emergency housing, but certainly supportive housing and permanent housing for the homeless. The hotel, the Quality Inn near the Thruway, is 144 hotel room, and it's our intention to convert it to 81 apartments, a mix of studio, 1, 2, and 3 bedrooms, to be able to serve homeless families and individuals with special needs at this location. We've hired Mass Design from Poughkeepsie to bring what's known as a trauma-informed care design, so that all aspects of the facility are being considered: light, space, color, texture, to help create and contribute to a sense of well-being. I'd urge you to consider the leverage that these ARPA funds can bring in all of your projects, frankly, but certainly here. We have already won an award from Empire State Supportive Housing Initiative. I thank Shannon and Michael for, Michael wrote the grant. And so we have Empire State Supportive Housing Initiative, which will provide significant annual subsidies to this project to the tune of between $2 and $2.5 million annually for rental assistance and to pay for the supportive services, the types of which you see here, to be able to permanently house the homeless but provide robust services for them as well. So we have already leveraged significant dollars, and we hope to be able to leverage significant capital dollars as well. We have taken a look at the breakdown of the housing that we will create here, combining some of the units. We also intend to keep the pool as a therapeutic use. We have some common space to provide services. We have some plans for the outside that I'll show you in a second. And we also have a former restaurant, the Rudigan Steakhouse, that frankly, we're looking to put out in both ways, perhaps a commercial franchise operation to attract the public onto the site, or perhaps a more supportive venue at that location as well. Current parking lot, we hope to be able to add the building, change the image, provide a rich array of activity space, gardening. We hope to bring us a green and sustainable design with a solar and energy efficiency to the site as well. We're going to have a commercial space that we are looking for a variety of potential uses for on the site. An aerial view shows the proximity to the thruway. The potential, we are purchasing the vacant lot in between the hotel and the thruway for growing of food, walking trails, and other things to take advantage of the full site. As I mentioned, we've already secured the Empire State Supportive Housing Initiative for up to 100 units. We think we're going to end up in around 80 units. We are looking at our capital stack for something that could go as high as $29 million. It will include a permanent loan. We have had conversations with a number of the other capital sources, including New York State OTDA, their homeless housing assistance program. We've been talking with New York State Homeless and Community Renewal about federal community development block grant and or home funds. And we've seen New York State appropriate $100 million in they're helping our neighbors with Dignity Act, the Honda funds that are specific to fund the purchase of hotels and or obsolete office buildings, specifically to create permanent supportive housing for the homeless. Currently, that funding is apparently, while the program and the law went statewide, the appropriation still seems in this past year to be stuck to the city of New York. We're hoping to see these funds go statewide. So we're looking to leverage significant capital dollars. We're looking to develop sort of a best-in-class approach providing supportive housing. We've seen the loss of our SRO units here in the city of Kingston. I think now with the other manor house closing, we're going to lose about 120 units. Here in the Hudson Valley, in terms of housing and housing the homeless and those with special needs, we've seen the closing of our psychiatric centers. Ulster County farmed out their mental health several years ago. The cost of housing is tremendous. And, in what led us to develop Landmark Place, which we recently opened up, at least half of the facility, was our tour of the boarding homes, 7 or 8 years ago. And, what I witnessed then was nearly... on the one hand, without that, people would be on the street. But on the other hand, the conditions were horrendous. Typically, I'd walk into a boarding home, house room, there'd be four beds, four TVs, three of the TVs are on, the bed linens are touching, so the bed bug infestation was constant. Two people are sitting in the room, and you look at a young man and say, how long have you lived here? And he said, 7 years. It's why we've tried to, in particular with the pandemic, to create permanent housing where everyone has their own apartment with shared services, but everyone has the dignity and the safety, specifically in a pandemic, to have their own apartment. The timeline is to start construction in the fall, complete it within a year, and occupy in late 23 or early 24. I think the need is to extend water and sewer infrastructure to this side of the thruway to serve the Quality Inn, which we will rename, because the current sewage treatment plant has a shelf life of 3 years or less, and the water is simply not suitable. This bringing the water and sewer across, we understand might serve others, but it's critical to serve our project. Again, we're really... quite thrilled to have the partnership between family and Catholic Charities and ourselves to move this project forward. Our board of directors here at RUPCO is prepared to authorize our borrowing of nearly $4 million to accomplish the purchasing and the pre-development. We believe this is an approximate $2 million ask under the infrastructure portion of ARPA funding to specifically provide water and sewer across the thruway to this site and perhaps others. And I think it will offer a truly beneficial and much needed permanent housing, supportive housing option to better care for the homeless here in Ulster County. I'll ask Michael or Shannon if they'd like to add anything, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Michael, Shannon. Do you want to add anything to the conversation?
No, thank you. Kevin's covered it.
Thank you. Committee members, questions? Chairwoman Bartels.
Thank you.
And thank you for the presentation. So the 2 million is the estimated, is that the estimated total cost for the extension of the sewer and the water infrastructure?
If I may.
Yes.
Yeah, so Dennis Larios, who's an engineer for working with the town of Ulster, has estimated $800,000 on sewer and $1.2 million on water.
Okay, great. Thank you. And so my follow-on question is, has there been a discussion with the town of Ulster about putting in a portion of this money? The town of Ulster, my understanding is they're receiving $1.38 million in ARPA funds. Yep. So I'd be curious why the full ask is to the county.
So they are going to assume full responsibility for the water and sewer system post-development and any extensions beyond RUPCO's property there. In terms of our interest is mainly in the project. So that's where we're jumping in. But the town assumes the full responsibility of the maintenance of the water district once it's done.
This is Michael Berg.
Yes, hi, Michael.
Could I say a few things about the
project? Please, go ahead.
First, I want the committee and the legislature to understand that there are virtually no motel rooms in our county. People are being sent to Greene County because we don't have motel rooms. People are being sent places that they'd have no connection to, like from Kingston to Highland or to Ellenville, because those are the only beds available in the county. What this plan would do would be to take 89 single individuals and families that are living in single rooms. There are families that have been living in a single room for over a year, for multiple years. This will give them the opportunity to be able to cook, to be able to live a normal life. There's another thing to point out, which is that if this, it seems like the water and sewer is a make or break for this project, but if this project happens, it will save the county in county tax dollars, by my estimate, $1.346 million a year. That's the county share of putting 81 families and individuals in motels. So while you will be spending ARP money, you will be saving county dollars. You know, as an agency that really struggles every night to place people that are homeless in motels if we can, and to find solutions, this is the biggest project that we have seen that will help families and single individuals. While it's only 6% of the ARP money, it will have a huge impact. It will bring a lot of dollars into the county. It will provide services that are not available. It will help families and individuals that are suffering very badly now. The other thing I would say is that we need the county to make this commitment so that we can move ahead and get the money to build the project. We have a commitment from Ishai of over $2 million a year in operating money. We know that the program will happen if we can get it built. So when a project is evaluated for whether it should be supported, there's the issue of whether we have site control. We have site control. Whether the community supports it. We have been told that if the water and sewer goes through, the town of Ulster will support it. And the project is of such significance that I really feel it has to be funded if this commitment is made. So I would ask you for your support. We don't need to spend the money now, but we need to get a commitment of the money so we can use it to leverage the capital dollars to build the facility and renovate it. Thank you.
Michael, thank you for your valuable input. Thank you so much for that. Committee members, any other questions? All right, I'm going to make a recommendation that we pick this back up in 2 weeks.
Legislator Levine has his hand.
I'm sorry. Thank you. Legislator Levine, I'm sorry about that, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a question regarding the logistics of the project. I kind of, you know, was looking at the PowerPoint presentation, and I was looking at the the backside of the project, you know, the schematic plans, the throughway facing side. And my only question and somewhat concern about it would be in regards to, has there been any testing done or mitigation of, if in terms of if there was an issue of, I know that some properties that are abutting the throughway, there's been issues of contamination, health issues, a few people in Saugerties that have properties that are right up against the throughway over the years have had issues of cancer and other health issues. And I saw that there's a proposal to be putting, you know, a garden in for farming purposes and for, you know, cultivating of food. And I just wanted to make sure that, you know, any runoff or chemicals that might have been, that might be used on the road aren't going to be leaching into the ground and causing issues for any tenants. So has that been looked into?
Aaron, thank you for your comments. And from RUFCO's perspective, we'll be doing both phase one and phase two environmental reviews. Soils will be tested, and I think that we are really, as I said, we've hired a design firm that really is a leader currently in health and trauma-informed care design. So all aspects, including very good points that you raised. We're concerned about the proximity to the throughway. We're looking at various ways to berm or plant trees and certainly protect children and what have you. But there is some space there, and we are suggesting at this point, and really merely suggesting, opportunities to develop some parts of that space. We'd love to have some growing of food, but your points are well taken, and all aspects will be carefully examined.
Thank you for that. Legislator Sperry.
I realize that the ask here is for the ARPA money, mostly for water and putting, you know, the sewage system in. But I'm just curious, because I'm assuming that a majority of the folks that will be living in this space will need to get into Kingston to go to doctor's offices or visits or go grocery shopping or any appointments that they might have. So is there any thoughts about a shuttle system or some type of transportation from the property into Kingston?
Yes, Megan, another very good question and a couple of responses. So just this past week, we received our first bus at Landmark Place. So we at Landmark Place had programmed for, because even Landmark's a little further out. So it's a 10-seater, doors open, you walk down, you can, you know, down an aisle, and thrilled to have it. And we're hiring a driver. We'll be running our own transportation from Landmark for the tents there. Similarly, at the Quality Inn, we will have a bus. We will have our own bus system. We'll certainly take advantage of our county, but we want to run our own bus with regular routes into Kingston, to food, to all kinds of places. We are currently, you know, there are a number of hotels currently being used on the Route 28 corridor, two or three currently, and we are seeing people walking. The corridor is not safe. We've had some preliminary conversations with the county to start to take a look at potential improvements to the roadscape, and issues of connectivity in terms of sidewalk development over time, and we'd love to play a role in increasing all of that. But the day we open, we'll have our own bus to provide transportation, because it's a dangerous situation currently, and we know we have to provide and make available that connectivity back to all of the amenities that people are gonna need.
Thank you, and thank you, Legislator Sperry, for that question. It was on my mind as well. I appreciate you bringing that to the front. All right, with no more questions, I'm going to again suggest that we take no action. Oh, I'm sorry, Legislator Green. I keep wanting to move this along. Sorry.
Legislator Green and then Legislator Erner. There's two hands up.
Thank you. Thank you. Legislator Green.
Thank you. I want to commend the developers of this project, because I did hear sustainable building practices and renovation retrofitting the facility, and I even heard solar. And I'd like to request that we get more information on that. I'd like to have some specifics about what you are doing, but you know, by way of ringing the bell, you get a gold star for thinking of that and including it. But I really would like to have more detail if that could be provided. Thank you.
Kevin, you got the gold star tonight from Mana Joe. Legislator Erner.
Thank you, Chair Criswell. Some concerns over contaminants in City of Kingston drinking water has come to my attention recently. Is what's the source of the water going to be at this facility?
I should know the question. I don't have my director of construction. I believe it's town of Ulster water, I think, correct?
I think we're connecting over to the town of Ulster water on the Washington Avenue side, but I can confirm that with the engineer.
If you could, and then just send that back to the committee, and Legislator Erner will make sure we get that question answered for you.
Yeah, I don't have any knowledge of contaminants in Kingston water, so I can address the connection piece.
Thank you. All right. Now, can I do last call and move this along? Okay, thank you. So I'm going to again suggest no action. We'll pick this up again in 2 weeks. And everybody on the committee okay with no action on this? Great. Thank you very much. All right, moving on. Can I have a motion for discussion of Resolution 32, please?
Motion.
A second, please.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Great. All right. Resolution 32, my understanding, is the support resolution for Resolution 29. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. So I don't know how much of a discussion we have to have about this, but I'm happy to entertain questions, or if somebody would like to sort of quickly go over why this resolution exists.
This is the companion to the capital. So this is the contract that would be entered into with the county in USITA.
Great. So we've really already heard the contents of the scope of service. So I don't think we really need to have much discussion unless anybody wants to have lots of discussion about the creation of a contract. All right. Seeing no interest in that long conversation, I'm just going to also say we take no action on this for this evening and pick this back up when we meet in 2 weeks. Thumbs up on that, everybody? Yes? Okay, great. I'm going to move forward with that. All right. So thank you. This has been a really good and full meeting. So thank you for your attention to this. As you know, we all have our work cut out for us. There's a lot of documentation that we still have to take in and understand. And we will be convening again. So we are looking at setting another meeting for either February 9th or February 10th. Do we want to try and figure that here, or should we try and send you a doodle poll or something along those lines? Can we send a poll, Amber? Or just poll out to the committee members and figure out 9 or 10? Great. That's what we'll do. We'll send you we'll send committee members an email and try and get what date works better for you on that. Legislator Green.
Yes, I want to ask, there were some working groups created the last mission.
I brought that up, Legislator Green, and I said I talked about the importance of those working groups and that we reinvigorate them and make sure that they are a resource to this committee for deeper dives into subject areas that we need a deeper dive into. So it's really on our radar, and I'm going to work with Chairwoman Bartels on identifying who was on that committee that is now off, or who was on the assignment that's no longer on the legislature, reassigning to those committees if we need to, and getting them back up and running. Am I speaking out of turn there, Chairwoman Bartels? We agreed on that. So great. So does that answer your question, Legislator Green?
Yeah, but I like we've hired 3 people to work on this and many departments in the executive branch. I'd like to have a commitment that those, once they are re-identified and clear, that there will be a meeting in February of those subcommittees. I've been waiting with information to share since October. So I want to do a by whom, by when. I really want to get specific.
I can't speak. Yeah, I was just going to ask Chairwoman Bartels if you could speak to that because you're better with the master schedule at this point.
Sure. I mean, I think that we're really imagining, as Chair Criswell said, we're really imagining them as resources to this committee and not as having 7 or 8 separate standing meetings. To the extent that you have information to share, Legislator Green, I think that we could certainly look to schedule, you know, one of the specific meetings if there's specific work that needs to be done in advance of bringing it to this committee. But I don't want to make a commitment to having each of those committees automatically each of those working groups automatically necessarily meet, because I think a lot of that discussion is going to happen here in this open forum. But for certain, if you would like, we'll have to look at to make sure that I know in the case of the working group that you were on, your counterpart is no longer in the legislature. So we'll need to make sure that position gets appointed and that we can go ahead and have that working group meeting and report back to this committee with the information that you want to bring to this committee in terms of the details.
Thank you for that commitment to get those working groups reinvigorated and scheduled, and we will work on that. I just want to thank everybody again for their patience, and moving forward, I will try and keep these committee meetings to under an hour and a half. So did you have a question, Legislator Litz, or were you saying goodbye?
No, I did have a question.
Oh, yes.
It was an ask.
Sure.
When you determine when your next meeting is going to be, whether it's on the 9th or the 10th, would you notify the rest of us? So I would really like to participate.
Absolutely, sir. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yes, Chairwoman Bartels.
I also want to acknowledge Legislator Litz's question and say that I will make sure that all legislators are always noticed on the meetings of this committee. I've already spoken with the clerk's office about providing support staff for when the committee does begin meeting in person again. We anticipate that will eventually happen. And at the point that the committee needs to be in person, I'm working with the clerk's staff to make sure that we allow for the opportunity for legislators to Zoom in. Because I do think it's important that this committee hears the voices of any and all legislators who are interested and willing to participate. And I, for one, am going to be encouraging that participation among all legislators. So absolutely, legislators.
Thank you. And I want to just double on that and say thank you so much for all the legislators who showed up this evening and all your comments. I appreciate the thoughtful nature of them and the work that you did ahead of time to bring those thoughts to this meeting. With that said, I'm going to ask for a motion to adjourn.
Quickly, could we make sure we do our best to make sure anybody from the public? It's rarer and rarer, but I think we need to do as much as we can.
Absolutely. And just so you know,
let's get back in person, please.
We did definitely publicize this meeting and tried to get the word out there about this. There was a press release specifically for this committee that went out and did list the information about how people could join. So I'm really absolutely with you 100% on that. I would love the input of the public for how we spend this money. All right. So that said, motion to adjourn.
Motion.
Second, please.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you all. Have a great rest of your evening.
Good night, everyone. Thank you.
Be safe. Stay healthy.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.